I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Lukenya Hill campsite in Machakos in Kenya, in the continent of Africa. Today we discuss a subject that is very contemporary, African constitutions. And in order to understand and appreciate that subject, once again, we must understand it in the context of colonial legacy, because the constitutions in the continent of Africa have that history, depending on who the colonizer was. So that if, for example, a country was colonized by the French, the history of those constitutions must be traced to 1958. And 1958 is significant because in that year, Charles de Gaulle became the president of France, and the struggle and the call for decolonization was continuing apace. And a referendum was then held in all the former French colonies to say either yes or no. Yes meant that you continued to be within the French fiefdom, and you would have what was then characterized as the Gaullist constitution, which was fundamentally a mirror of how France was being governed. You had a president who was largely titular, and you had a prime minister who reigned government. All countries voted yes, except Guinea, with Ahmed Sekou Touré, who said, "We vote no, we prefer to be free in poverty than to be slaves in riches." And what the French did, of course, was then to allow them to do what it is that they desired. That was one category of constitutions with a French angle to them. In the case of the British, the process of negotiation normally took place in Whitehall, but for some reason, the constitutions were characterized as Westminster model. And that model could be seen in the case of Uganda, in the case of Kenya, in the case of Malawi, in the case of Zambia, in the case of Nigeria, and in the case of Ghana. And the very early days of this constitution saw the British monarch remained at the head with the local prime minister. That is what was characterized as the Westminster model constitution. In the case of Congo, and particularly the Democratic Republic of Congo, what was then known as Kinshasa, and at that time they also borrowed something that was very Belgian. They had a constitution with a president and a prime minister. And in Rwanda and Burundi, the same thing happened. The only difference that one saw in Rwanda and Burundi is because there were kingdoms in that part of the world. In Rwanda, there was a kingdom, as indeed as there was in Burundi, but there was another category of constitution. The last category of constitutions is interesting. The Portuguese. The process of decolonization started in earnest in sub-Saharan Africa, particularly in 1957 with Ghana. And then 1960 was the year of independence, the year of new constitution. But Portugal was different. Portugal refused to grant her colonies independence. Guinea-Bissau, no independence. Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, Amilcar Cabral is the head of it, no independence. Angola, with Agostinho Neto and Holden Robaito on one side and Jonas Malheiro Savimbi, no independence. Mozambique, no independence, with Zamora Moises Machel. And people have always explained that Portugal itself was in a crisis. And students of history will tell you that at that time, the leader, the strong leader of Portugal was Marcelo Caetano. And until the Carnation Revolution in 1974 that brought forth Antonio de Spinola, That is when the move for new constitutional dispensation started in the former Portuguese colonies. So that unlike others, they did not adopt a Portuguese constitution because they turned Marxist. Mozambique went to be pro-Soviet Union, as was Angola. They were supported by the Soviet Union at that time. And of course, even Guinea-Bissau. So their constitutions became one-party state constitutions, and they were Marxist-Leninist. And of course, the other kind of constitution was the apartheid constitution, which was the South African constitution that came into being in 1948 with the advent of the Nationalist Party led by Hendrik Verwoerd. And then in Rhodesia, you also had a constitution that was made in the image of Ian Smith. Ethiopia was unique because Ethiopia had a monarchy, a feudal monarchy led by Emperor Haile Selassie. The other category of constitutions were to be seen in Egypt. Once Egypt had overthrown the king, Gamal Abdel Nasser had a constitution that was basically, he was the president, and then Morocco was a monarch, Algeria and Tunisia. So that is the stream of constitution. Then something happened. From 1960s, the constitutional dispensation started being destabilized with the first coup d'etat in 1963 in Togo with Silvanus Olympio. So that these constitutions which were inherited started being knocked down one by one, one by one. And that led to countries becoming one party state in Ghana even before 1966, before the overthrow of Nkrumah, already a one party state. Mobutu became a one party state. Kenya became a one party state. Tanzania, one party state. Uganda, there was a coup d'etat. There was no party administration by fiat. So when one talks about African constitution, one must have that history. But something happened. With the collapse of the Soviet Union and the fall of the Berlin Wall, the European hegemons brought in new constitutional dispensation with the emergence of civil societies, non-governmental organizations, and all these organizations were being funded by institutions in Europe and America, and they said, your constitutions must be democratic. And democracy equals to, one, a new constitution which says that there is separation of powers, the executive, the legislature, the judiciary, free press, and of course, the civil society. And that happened almost across the continent of Africa. It happened in Uganda in 1995. It happened in Rwanda, in Kenya, in almost all countries. So we have these constitutions. And the irony of it is that most of these constitutions were mirror images of constitutions which were prepared as templates. So that the tendency with African constitutions is essentially to mimic the governance systems in their colonizing countries. So that if you look at the former British colonies, even when they have eliminated the monarch, their presidents almost become monarchical. It is Nyerere of Tanzania that once said that when you are talking about an African president, you don't say how powerful they are. Their constitutions give them more power than the Roman Catholic Pope and the Queen of England combined. This was the nature of African constitutions, creating what were called imperial presidencies. Imperial in the sense that they could rule by fiat. So today, therefore, when you look at most African countries, you find constitutions which on paper have this structure. They have an executive, which has a limited term. Limitation of term was also one of the things that was prescribed as being an index of democracy. You'll have them having a judiciary. You'll then, of course, have them have a legislature. And then you'll have them having certain bodies which are considered to be independent. They'll have something called the ombudsman. they'll have something called independent electoral bodies, and they'll have all human rights commission. That is the character of most African constitutions as we see them now. But beyond constitution, there is something called constitutionalism. The words and letters of the constitution, are they alive? Are they words that are interpreted into action? Once these constitutions had come into being and they set term limits, and in certain cases they even set age limits, particularly with regard to the presidency, we started seeing the undoing of constitutions, where countries now say, we are removing term limits, we are removing age limits, because this is not in keeping with African traditional governance. So African constitutions find themselves in a very contradictory space, that they are constitutions which are informed by the colonial past. They are constitutions which are informed by a confusion of that past and contemporary history. They are confused by the embrace of terminologies and governance structures which are Eurocentric. And they also find themselves in difficulties in certain countries where they have to accommodate traditional governance. If you go to countries like Nigeria, where you have strong traditional rulers, or Ghana, where you have strong traditional rulers, where you have, you go to Zambia and Malawi, where you have strong traditional rulers, constitutions are suffering because they are honored in breach. In a nutshell, therefore, one can say that African constitutions are in a state of flux because they are not homegrown. When I was a young law student and a young law teacher, I loved a complex English word to describe a constitution which is homemade, autochthonous, to mean they are not homegrown. And that is why in the recent past, we have now started seeing the emergence once again of the overthrowing of those constitutions. So the verdict on African constitutions is they are still alien. They are still informed by alien Eurocentric philosophy. They are still remote. They do not relate to governance. John Henry Clark, that great American, once said that the tragedy of African governance systems and the instruments that they use is that they are a weak and poor mimicry of the countries that colonize them, and that no African country will ever succeed on the basis of those constitutions. And if you ever doubted, you can see the governance structures and the crisis in governance that are happening even when we have these constitutional dispensations. The subject of constitution is a long one, but that is only but the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg demands that we read further and investigate further. You know, whenever I think about constitution, and as a constitutional law student and scholar myself who has written on the subject, I hold the view that Africa must rethink governance. And when we rethink governance, one is saying that there are elements within traditional governance systems which must be infused into modern constitutional writing. And I'm using the word modern to mean contemporary. So that there are elements in governance systems, if you go to the Gada system of the Oromo, you go to the Maasai systems and other systems, this can be borrowed, this can be infused, so that we are able to write constitutions that respond to the needs of the people. We must discard this Eurocentricity, because we must also know that the African nation as is constituted now is artificial. These are boundaries that were imposed by the colonialists in Berlin. And you have very many communities within one nation state. It is not like you are dealing with the mono-ethnic countries. So how do you have a constitutional dispensation that takes care of all these things in a manner that is acceptable to the majority of the people? We have ideas. The idea is borrow, adopt, and adapt and don't do things that work in Europe and cannot even begin to fly in the continent of Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take a break as we mull over the things that we have discussed on the continent of Africa and come back next time. Thank you very much.